Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Many of you have probably heard by now there is a new candidate running for president, and I'd like to have all of you meet him. Those who have not heard anything from him yet, he is going to be speaking on it today. As many of you know, we have a broken system, political system, in the United States of America. There is a lot of division. There is a lot of chaos going on, and we need somebody that is different, because the leadership that we've had in this country has failed us and continues to fail us. As many of you know, we may be in for a government shutdown this weekend. And if that happens, many are going to be in difficult positions, because it's going to affect not only the military, not only others that are in government, but it's going to affect you, the citizens of the United States of America. So we're going to have Andy Williams Jr., candidate for the presidential campaign, speaking on his run and also what his experience is as far as knowing what the people need, what they want, and what they should understandably get. Andy is a rabbi, modern-day abolitionist, an advocate for the people. Born in Illinois, dropped out of high school, eventually took up residence at Illinois DOC, and ultimately was determined to improve himself. He attended college, obtained his degree, and helped people across the nation with legal issues, housing, criminal, traffic citations, judicial, prosecutory misconduct, IRS issues, and much, much more. On July 3rd, 2023, he announced his campaign to run for the President of the United States and is running on the We the People Party ticket with the message of unity, representing fights and rights of the people and restoring America. His platform is to abolish all forms of slavery in every area, and that includes for every race that's going through such slavery in this country, the form of unfair taxation, mass incarceration, and to prevent government from infringing upon your rights of we the people. All are welcome to join in. I hope everyone will join in to hear Andy Williams Jr., presidential campaign, speak on his run for the presidency. Andy Williams Jr., Mr. Williams, are you on with us?
I am. How you doing, Miss Leona?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Could you please introduce yourself a little bit more, let the audience know a little bit about you, what you plan to do, what your goal is, and how you'd like to get this country back on track?
So my name is Andy Hope Williams, a.k.a. the Hood Candidate. And the reason why I'm the Hood Candidate, because I go out and get the information and bring it back to the community. And the community is all the people, not just, you know, certain demographics or marginalized areas. I think all of us have some sort of bias or oppression upon us in one form or another, whether it's taxes, prisons, human trafficking. It's a flurry of things. So my goal is to really do the work right now. And so often people say, when I'm elected, I'm going to do this. That's not my story. My story is I've already filed a claim against the United States and 30 other states for their ongoing role in slavery, primarily in the prisons. You know, I challenged the 13th Amendment, the exception, through litigation. And because the rights of the people are being infringed, you don't need to elect somebody merely to help you get a remedy for infringing upon your rights. That's what Andy is doing right now, advocating across the states, helping people with their litigation, helping people stop paying taxes lawfully, because believe it or not, taxes are legal, but they're unlawful. And the reason why I'm saying that is because the government works for the people. The people don't work for the government. So when our campaign talks about abolishing modern-day slavery, if you going to work and they're taking taxes out your check, that means you working for the government. That means you have been enslaved. And that's unconstitutional. It's unlawful. And people need to know about their rights. And that's what Andy is doing each and every day, teaching people about their rights, how the government has infringed upon those rights, and why we have a right to alter, abolish, and form a new form of government. And that's what We Are the People, the party we are part of, is doing. So that's Andy. That's a little bit about me, I guess, for now.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for coming on the show, because I want the audience to know it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult in this country for people who are of the average citizens, or people who have actually experienced what we all have gone through at some point in time, to step forward and say, I want to make a change. I really want to make a change. We had a former chaplain, well, she is a current chaplain now, but she was a former advocate and a current advocate for the wrongfully convicted. But she's also done a lot for the community, and her name is Madeline Colburn. Madeline has been an advocate for some time, and in 2008, she ran for the governorship of Missouri. People taking a chance like this are the people that we can rely on. And the reason I say this is because if they are taking this step, that many of us throughout the country should be taking, advocating in some way, coming on the show, asking questions, talking about the issues, brainstorming, trying to figure out ways to resolve the issues in this country. I give anybody, and I admire anyone that does these sort of things, because we're always up against a battle when we try to make positive changes, changes that's going to unite and not divide our government and our people of the United States of America. So please call in, ask questions. Mr. Andy Williams Jr. is willing to answer any questions you may have. He's willing to provide them with feedback. This is how we're going to resolve the issues in this country right now. As we all know, there is so much division between two, one former and one current presidential leader of this country, both having legal issues that they're trying to prevent themselves or their loved one from going to prison. If we have people like this running the country, then anybody can run the country. But the ones that are going to be successful are the ones that have been there, done it, and can do what they need to do to help every one of us to get back on track. Because this country right now is very dysfunctional, and it's falling. So please, let's have people call in, ask questions, or whatever. But Mr. Williams, I'd like to have you speak a little bit on some of the things that you want to see. But first of all, I'd like to take a call and ask the caller to state your name, please. 419.
Yep, that's me. My name is Frankie. I'm just calling in to support Andy. I've been working with Andy, on his campaign. I met him through LinkedIn, and I just wanted to, vocalize my support as someone living in the United States for Andy's campaign. It is the most hopeful thing I've seen in this country in a very, very, very long time. So I just wanted to say that Andy's a wonderful person, and his campaign really gives me hope for this country for once in my life.
Thank you, Angie. I really appreciate that. And step in any time during the show to, to ask questions or even provide feedback if anyone should call and needs questions answered as well. But one of the things I was going to say is I'm a firm believer in God, and God works in mysterious ways. And sometimes it's the impossible that he provides and makes possible. Just as the Israelites try to cross, get away from Egypt, he made the path for them. And I'm hoping that we will also see a path opened in this area, because we desperately need change. And I am appreciative of anybody that is for change and that wants to be a part of it. So please do feel free to call in, ask questions, provide feedback. And even if you have something you want to say that's negative, this is how we grow. So again, I'm going to leave the platform right now to our presidential candidate, Andy Williams Jr. Andy, I am going to leave it to you to talk about the things that you will be doing and the goals that you want to see fulfilled.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I'm in Illinois, and there's an organization. It's a national organization called Tactical Civics. And I'm pretty sure it's primarily conservative Republicans or Republicans. I mean, I'm pretty sure that is the most of this. But because I believe in crossing party lines, which our party is, we are really the people, I'm sitting learning from them. And the first time I was on this call last Thursday, I learned something so powerful about the right to panel our own grand jury and how the militia has to come in and protect them. And so with that, what I've gleaned from that, which I've already got the books, they charge $5 a month to get all this training. If you sign up, if you pay the year in advance, it's $50. And I'm saying this because all the books this guy, David Zuniga, has written, they're all free in a PDF form. And when I heard about the right to panel our own grand jury, that's so powerful to us that have been incarcerated in these draconian sentences or wrongful convictions, or most importantly, when the judge or the prosecutor violates their oath. How do we get a remedy if we have to keep going to the exact same system, which they're all members of the bar, and asking them to change their decision? It's difficult. It's very difficult because we've seen the people being locked up 40 years, 60 years coming home. And so when I heard about that, I'm beginning to study that so we can start paneling our own grand jury and going after these prosecutors and judicial officers that are violating their oath. Like every single day, the evidence isn't there, there's still a conviction. And that's ridiculous. And we have to, I don't want to say we have to, because I'm doing it. I'm crossing party lines. I don't care what you say behind my back. I don't care if you poke me in the face. If you're going to give me some information to abolish this modern day slavery that has been labeled as mass incarceration, I'm going to take 5-10 for the team. It doesn't matter. I'm going to do what I got to do because I realize what I've been learned, what everything that I've learned, we have not got the mass liberation that we need. And that's going to take somebody willing to put down their own implicit bias, which is mine, and say, I'm going to cross that party line. I'm going. I got to go. I got to go, meaning I got to go in and learn what I need to learn and then bring that back to the community and teach.
I have one question as well. Now, there's going to be at some point in time, you probably will be asked to join these debates that they've been having around the country, right? When you join these, if and when you do join these debates, some of the issues that the people are going to be asking questions on are a lot of the things right now that are happening that are really causing a lot of problems, because we have, right now, we have a problem with the global warming. We have a problem with the division in the country. We have a problem with racism. We have a problem with the economy. We have a problem with global threats of war between Ukraine and Russia and all these other countries that are now coming together, and also the issues of the nuclear weapons. So what can you talk a little bit about a little bit about each of these issues that are going to be presented at these debates?
So for one, I'm not doing no debates with nobody. You don't debate about people's rights. And the role of a president or the role of government is to protect the rights of the people, not debate about them. Like, you know, and I'm being real about that. We're here for a conversation on a dialogue, because any individual that's running for president or Congress or any one of those offices, the only thing they should be talking about is solutions for the people. What are we going to debate about? Whose party is better? Who did this? We're too grown to be pointing the fingers at the Democrats or the Republicans or that. We need to deal with the solution. So now when we talk about this, the global warming, first of all, there's experts that are already out here that's doing that. But one of the things that I do know about the global warming, in fact, that's one of my guys that helps produce the songs that we're going to come out with the campaign, Jordan, I take it back, Jordan. We are polluting the oceans, throwing waste in there. The amount of trees that we're cutting down is messing up the whole ecosystem. It's just throwing it to crap. That's not the word I want to use, but throwing it to crap. And we're acting like global warming doesn't exist. We're acting like it doesn't exist because somebody doesn't have experience with it. So I can speak to it, but the purpose of the president, which we will be saying the buck stops here, is to bring in those experts. Kanye did a song that's too much power. That's too much power for one man to have, or something. I forget the lyrics, and I agree with that. This is not about an Andy being the president. Come to me, I got all the solutions. It's about Andy being a representative of the people and saying, when you come to me, the buck stops here because we're going to come up with the solution. That's what we're going to come up with. And when we think about the foreign aid, we got domestic issues here locally, domestically, houselessness, you know, poverty, all of this stuff happening here, and we're worried about something else in another country. And I'm not saying we can't offer foreign aid. But when you're sending billions over to Ukraine,
trillions.
And we got trillions, and we got individuals that's losing their houses, can't afford their taxes, can't, like, that's about the dumbest stuff I've ever heard. And again, a lot of us are not privy to the backdoor deals, what's going on, but I'm pretty sure there's some stuff that's happening that is unconscionable, that's wrong, that violates the Constitution, which, by the way, that's where the Congress and the president's job description is in those documents. So any candidate coming in promising you that they're going to do something, you got to ask them how. You got to ask them how. Because Congress is the one that's doing all this spending. It's not the president. Congress is. They're the one passing it. So what we need to do as the people is to know that there's 468 seats that's up for election in the 2024, that's up for re-election in 2024, and we need 300 people at a minimum across the states to come on board and run for office. And we need to run for the office under we the people have the power. We the people have the power, and we the people are fed up. And anytime you fed up, you got to go stand up and do something. And that is one of the solutions we can do as a people. We can run for office with a unified message that we no longer will allow our rights to be infringed. We're not here to talk about the problems of the past. We're here to talk about the solutions of today. And only we, the people with the experience, can do that. That's all that we can do.
Now, I'd like to ask, you mentioned you wouldn't be participating in any of the debates. How would you get this, all these messages out that you're speaking of? Because we're looking at a country, and people are going to be in every state are going to be wondering how you would be different from these others. And if you're not going to be in the debates, how would they be able to ask you these questions and try to figure out exactly what it is that where you are going to be different? How do you plan to get your message out? And we have another caller, but how would you want to state your name, please? 419.
Yep, it's Frankie again. Sorry, Andy. I'm just wondering. You'll probably get to this, but I'm wondering if somebody wants to volunteer for your campaign, how they can do that, and how they, kind of piggybacking off what Leona said, how they can get the information to volunteer and like ask you questions about your campaign.
Okay, so let me answer the first question. I don't mean I'm not going on to a debate. I'm just saying when I'm there, I'm not there to debate. I'm there to dialogue. That's what I want to clarify, Ms. Leona. No, I'll go because that's what they call them. But we're in a generation now where we have to change the narrative. And if we keep going back and forth as adults, well, children live what they learn. So shouldn't somebody stand up and say, no, we're going to curve this way. This is how we're going to do this. You guys over there can debate. Talk to me when you want to have a dialogue, when you want to have a discussion, because that's what grown-ups do. We got a whole bunch of men and women that are children acting like a bunch of kids. And then that's the reason why our nation is in the position it's in, because look at the leaders, look at the examples of those that are professed to be leaders. So that's my answer to that, Ms. Leona, so I can clarify that. And my website is up. However, I'm not sure if the email address is on there on how to contact us. It's not, because I didn't even send it to them. But the best way that you could get a hold to me or Frankie or anybody else you see on LinkedIn, posted or sharing anything on LinkedIn, or if you're on Facebook, anybody that shares my post or shares the post, they have access to me, or you can request me on LinkedIn and message me directly. Pretty much everybody that I've met has been a direct, personable conversation. That's how it's been. And that's how we plan to move this movement going forward, is to bring, again, the neighbor back to the hood. That's why I'm saying I'm the hood candidate. And the neighbors always spoke to other neighbors. This whole thing, I don't know you, I don't trust you, I don't want to talk to you. We got to get past all that. And we have to move back into the 60s, where there was a whole movement with the hippies, the the Jesus freaks, the civil rights movement, the Mexican Revolution. All of that was a sense of, you know, embracing when everybody came together around that Vietnam War, or how it happened in 2020 with the George Floyd and the social unrest, and how many people came together. I'm saying that's what we can do as people. But what do we do after the march? And that's where I'm coming in now. Saying after the march, what do we do? What do we do? And now we have to have a plan. And that plan is to abolish modern-day slavery in all forms. And
okay,
only the people can do that.
I wanted to ask you, Angie asked you, had mentioned about the volunteer and the information and everything. And I know that you're just really starting out. So if you will, Andy, if you can give your information for how people can contact you, how they can volunteer, how they can, what some of the things are that they can help with, whatever it is you may want to say. And at the end of the show, we'll also ask you to do it again, because this is very important to gain the additional support to work with you on these issues. I think what you're doing, what you're planning on doing, is awesome. And it's going to take a lot of hard work from a lot of people. So if you can, give your information, and then we can proceed from there. But I wanted to also ask one quick question. You will, I'm sure, be with other people running for the presidency. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of conflict in statements and all of these things that they usually go through when they bring one another down during an election. How would you handle something like that when they do start questioning or challenging your abilities?
So, one, the truth always sets people free. So I'm not worried about nobody, you know, coming at me about anything that would be controversial, because if it's the truth, it's the truth. And the only thing that I truly feel somebody can come to Andy that's controversial, well, you was locked up before. You sold drugs. You were arrested before for domestic battery. And I speak to each one. Yep, that means I got experience. That's what it does. I can share my story about how I grew up with my stepmom. She was German, and the household I lived in. Or I can talk about the Men Project that really deals with the root of two victimized people lashing out at each other. And then, oh, guess what? Well, we uprooted that. So that means I have experience. Or we could talk about when I went to prison. I have experience. Or I spent 6 months in the mental health center. I have experience, meaning I know what the solution is, because I'm proof of that. I'm proof of that. Oh, you were in a gang. Sure was. That's why I know it's unconstitutional to criminalize somebody based on their status, because everybody has the right to association. So bring it. That's how I feel. Bring it. I'm the one that sued the United States and 30 other states. And as a plug, if you go to www.hood.candidate.com, that's my movement platform. That's my personal brand. It will show you all of the things that Andy has been doing. Not all of them, some of them, because I've been doing so much. It's I couldn't even explain all of the things I'm doing. But what you can guarantee is I'm a brother that has experience. The opioid crisis, my younger brother committed suicide on an overdose back in 2018. Mass shootings, there was a mass shooting in Aurora, Illinois. Henry Pratt, February 14th, 2019. The shooter, Gary Martin, that was my childhood friend. I had to do the eulogy. I had to go to that job to get the stuff that they wanted to give to his mother because some of the people at the warehouse knew he was a good man. He had got pushed to the limit from systemic oppression. I was able to see part of his employee file. 15 years of being discriminated against, harassed, violating his pay periods, so much stuff. So I think I lend a little more life experience and credibility to this campaign. And I'm going to always be honest. I don't pretend to know everything. What I do know is I know there's somebody who does. And if we don't know, we'll find somebody who does. We want to model the prison system after Norway. North Dakota tried it. We want to abolish the slave patrols and the slave catchers, which is the evolution of modern-day policing. That spirit is there. We want to go back to constitutional sheriff, you know, because right now you just have somebody applying for a job, can take a life or violate your rights, and then claim immunity because they don't have nothing that holds them accountable. That's what we the people come in at. You know, I'm not saying abolish the police. When we talk about defund the police, we're saying reallocate some of those funds from that police budget to prevention. Don't come in the community trying to police if you ain't lived in the community because you're a stranger. We don't know you. You don't know us. We have a different culture, a different identity. We're yelling because maybe that's how we do here. You think it's a threat. Now all of a sudden you done arrested somebody, bust them in the head and killed them because you didn't understand somebody else's culture. That's why they're saying defund the police. Let's get to the root of this stuff, which we know. If we don't know, I'm sharing with you, policing has evolved from slave patrols, slave catchers, and that has a similarity of that spirit in modern-day policing. Not in all men and women, because men and women take on the profession of police officers. So not every man and woman has that spirit. But as an overall, that's that spirit. That's that spirit. And we're not fighting against these people. We're fighting against a spirit, a principality in high places, meaning that's something that was created before we were even here. So do you think we're going to beat it in the, like, naturally? No, we're not. But what we can do is hold people accountable that brings forth that deterrent that will bring forth the necessary change.
You mentioned defunding the police, and one of my pet peeves of what's going on in the prison system and also with the law enforcement. My theory is to defund the DOC and also defund law enforcement until there is transparency, until we see positive interaction with the people in the communities and those in the prison. I'm a strong believer of transparency, and we don't see much of that at all in government. We don't see it with the Democrats or the Republicans. We don't see it with the legislative members. We don't see it in the prisons. We don't see it in these organizations that claim to help those who are less fortunate. We see a lot of fraud going on in these organizations. We see a lot of lies and deceptions when it's time for the elections. They will do anything or say they will do anything to get your votes, and after that you don't hear from them anymore, or they lie. So my thing is defunding in every area until there's transparency. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not gonna give no shout out, but it sounds like that. Do you know that part of defunding those alphabet groups, FBI and all them, that's part of what Donald Trump is saying? Like, he literally is saying that right now. what I believe is we need to go back into our own communities and in essence, police our own communities. But it's not through policing. It's through peace officers. And what a peace officer is there to ensure there's no breach of the peace. That's what it is. And there's common law, not this contract law or legislation, which is legislation is under the color of law. It's not law. It's color of law. And common law, a peace officer could arrest somebody for a felony that was committed in their own eyes, like if they saw it, or where there was a breach of the peace. Well, the problem with that is now these policy enforcers, a.k.a. police officers, are the ones that's breaching the peace, and there's no accountability for them. And when we abolish this prison industrial complex, meaning getting rid of these victimless crimes where there's no victim, you're going to reduce these modern-day plantations. That's what we're going to be able to do. Then we'll be able to deal with the generational trauma, provide the healing, like Dr. Joy DeGroy, she talks about in her post-traumatic slave syndrome, where it's generational trauma that's been passed down and passed down. And the generational trauma just isn't in the marginalized communities. All of the people have been traumatized for generations from one way or another, whether you see it through the TV, you hear it on the news, you watch it in your community. The difference is some people really access, you know, these mental health providers or the healing circles, which I've had that. I've had therapists and been through that and have one now because it's a lot that goes on. And I think the things that I've done personally, I believe that needs to be part of all of these peace officers' requirement. You know, you look at what it takes to become a police officer. It's nothing. No real life experience. You look at these prosecutors that were 10 years and then they become a judge. And now all of a sudden you just believe they could flip a switch and make neutral decisions. No. And if you don't have experience in this, to those that don't, how would they know what to do to fix? How would they know what to change? That's what Andy brings to this that I believe nobody else has ever brought to this type of campaign. And what we talk about with our staff is we're going to win no matter what the decision is, because now people are aware. People are awoke to their rights and how they've been infringed for generations and generations. And now we have a team of people across the states that's willing to be an advocate for you right now, which is why the Hood Candidate brand of me is saying we can't wait till an election. Imagine me saying, well, if you vote me in, I'm going to give you this. How many times do these politicians state that? They get in, they don't give it to you. They don't get in, they don't give it to you. Well, when you look at, go back and see my 2020 campaign, everything that I talked about on that campaign, I have been doing. All of these lawsuits that I've been filing against the police and everybody else, it came from my 2020 campaign.
Okay. Without discussing any more about the lawsuits and all of this, I'd like to ask questions about basically what's going on in the country with the economy. Right now, there's a serious issue with the economy, and I know it's because all this funding is going to other countries. And this is something that some of the Republicans are furious about, and I think this is why it might be a contribution to the possible shutdown this weekend, is because they don't agree with the current president in sending all this money over to other countries. But that's one of the issues. But also, again, we have a serious issue with the economy. That's one of the things I was hoping you could speak on. But I also want to ask you about the issue of racism in this country, because this is a major issue in this country. And this is where, even when the former president, President Obama, is a lot of people really liked this president. They respected him. They respected the first lady. But what about the people in this country that are totally I mean, I know racism is a big problem in this country, and there are some that are so racist that they will do anything to prevent anything from progressing when it comes to unity in the United States of America. What are your thoughts on that?
So I think the position of what we consider as racism has been magnified to such a level that it's more than what we really say it is. And I say that because there's certain, in fact, I think all over, there's people that get along. And they're not, yeah, we see the difference of the skin. But so often, from my experience and other people I've experienced, that people have been helped. And then some people, like today I had a small group with about seven older men, mostly in their 70s, at the park. And their position was all the stuff that happened in the 60s. It was a younger brother there that's probably in his 20s, 30s, early 30s. He said he didn't care what went on with them. He not having that this generation. And that's because we've watched what happened in the 60s, some of us, with the water hoses and the dogs being sicked on and, the shooting that's been happening then that's still happening now. And there's a part of our generation that's saying, we ain't going to stand for that. We're not going to put up with that. And so how do we really deal with this? And that's why I come back to the dialogue. But there's also accountability, because that officer that killed Michael Brown out of there in Ferguson, I don't quote me on his name, but I feel like that's his name. He should have been charged. The guy who shot Mr. Blake in the back in Wisconsin, he should be charged. The police officers that are killing people and saying we're getting away with immunity, they should be charged. We're not just talking about the one for George Floyd and those little, those convictions. Van Dyke shot Laquan McDaniel, one of those, got off with like 6 years, 4 years, some baby time. There's no deterrent in that. So when we say systemic racism, it's because we're watching certain people in skin color do stuff to other people and getting away with it. That's what we're saying. That power structure has got to go. And the only way we can get rid of that power structure is if we, the people, rise up to it. Like, there's not, I have to be honest with this. There's nothing that Andy can do as president without the people. That's why we are the people. We have the power. That's why I don't want to promise I'm going to fix anything unless we fix it together. So that means we're coming together as the people. We're saying we're going to declare our independence and we're going to exercise our right, in fact, our duty to alter and abolish the form of government as today. And that's what we can do as the people.
Okay, so as we know, there, when we speak of racism, there's a lot of multiracial marriages and relationships in this day and age in this country. And there's a lot of people who even voted for President Obama who were of Caucasian race. So when we talk about racism, we're not talking about all the whites that are racist. So please tell me what you would want to say to the Caucasians that are totally against racism. Tell me what you would tell them, how they can help if they are opposed to all this racism that's going on in this country as well. How can they help?
So really what I think I would have to do, Ms. Leona, is to listen to them. Because there's a guy, Cole or something, on LinkedIn, and he's always wearing T-shirts and speaking about, the racism, the disparity. And he's a Caucasian man. And there's other advocates that I see on LinkedIn that post and people that I talk about that don't turn a blind eye to it. So I think what we could do as a people is show more of that too, and not just always speak on the negative. Let's also highlight some of the positive that other allies and Caucasians and other people that are doing. Because if we only continue to talk about the problem, we will never see those that are working towards a solution. I always think about the whites and civil rights. Did we talk about them? What about the Underground Railroad? The ancestors didn't have houses. Who put the candles in the houses for them to get away? What about William Lloyd Garrison, the white abolitionist, and those? We've always been here together, empowering and assisting each other. We have to change that narrative and that conversation. And we got to start calling people out by who they are and what they're doing and come at them and help them face their implicit bias that's in their mind while we don't ignore the implicit bias that we might have also.
What would you say to the black leaders? Because the reason I say this is because sometimes you hear people of color talk about the injustices going on with people of color, and you hear the leaders, the black leaders, talking about all the problems, as you just mentioned, but no resolution to the problem. Now, we even have one that has his own news thing, Politics Nation on CNN News. He talks about the problems all the time that the people of color go through, but what is happening with them? I mean, we have a problem on both sides. I'm going to say this frankly.
Come on.
We have a problem on both sides, and until we come together in unity and we come together for justice, and not just be pitting one another against one another. And we have extremists on both sides. But I'm going to tell you, it makes me sick because I have had to listen to our own people talk about the problems of the white man when, in fact, they sometimes turn against their own people themselves. You know, I have a problem with our people of color, when they get to be a certain status, social status, they start to make a certain amount of money. Then they're not really there for their own. Well, this is what we have with the white man and the black man, or the brown, or the beige, or the red. A lot of times the white man will look at these people of color and think that they're below them because of their race. Then we have the people of color who talk about the problem, but yet when they get to reach a certain status, they too forget and look down upon them. So we're talking about bringing people together of all areas, in all areas. We're talking about bringing a country together where we have so many people that are so, their greed, their power that they reek and they seek, they crave for, and they'll do anything in order to have this power. They'll do anything to gain all this money. So we're looking at a population throughout the country of every race that needs to come together in all fairness, not just when it benefits them, not just when it helps them, but when it helps us all to come together in unity and work on some major issues that are going on in this country. Because I interview people from other countries who say the entire world is looking at the United States of America. They talk about the racism in this country. They talk about mass incarceration. They talk about the power and the greed and the corruption and the deception and the lies. They talk about the abuses in the streets and in the prisons, the torment, the tortures, the violations. So how does somebody address all of this? I'd like to know what you think about this.
When it comes to those...
This is something that I hope and pray that the people that are going to be at these debates will ask our Democrats and our Republicans as well, because they need to answer some of these questions if they know how.
So when we talk about the people that are considered themselves black leaders, I got to go back to the scriptures and say the blind is always leading the blind. I do believe there's some generational things. And so what I say is a lot of things I was marched for in the 60s, I was born in 72. My generation has received that. But if you're so busy moving and marching instead of retiring and sitting down raising your grandkids and great-grandkids, you still fighting an invisible war that doesn't even exist no more because their generation is keeping that crap up alive. And I'll speak to this. One day Don Imus had spoke about somebody on a basketball team, and he caught her nappy head or something. And these two individuals that are pastors and reverends, they really marched to take away this individual's job and some other stuff. I took sour to that because the way I was understanding Don Imus was saying, I didn't know that was derogatory. I didn't know. He said, oh, you knew. But how, if somebody's saying that, why can't, even if they did know, let's just say they did know, he knew. But he was saying he didn't know, and he was looking to use that, we could have used that as an opportunity to bring forth the discussion and dialogue and teach. And see, that's what a reverend or a pastor should be, as a teacher, not so much a talker. And then when you moved in that realm, it's like you took in the position of saying, vengeance is mine. I want to repay evil for evil. So we got to be careful with these labels that's going on these individuals' names that we're calling leaders and saying, who are you leading? Where are you at? And for you, Miss Leona, we can go to the scriptures. In the days Christ said, they said, well, didn't I cast out and do this in your name? Yeah, but depart from me, you workers of iniquity, because you knew not me. And I feel like that's going to be very relevant as we look, you know, to what's happening with some of those leaders. Because there is a sense of self-hate that is embedded in people, which we go to Dr. Joy DeGroy that teaches about what I spoke on earlier, generational trauma from the post-traumatic slave syndrome that is still ongoing. It's still happening today. And a lot of times they say, well, you as a black person, you need to get over it. How can I get over what's still happening?
Exactly.
You know? How can
exactly.
I get over it? And I think that's why we need to show a lot more of us at that table of family, that family table of sisterhood and brotherhood that's dealing with all nationalities and culture and bringing that to the table. That's what I bring. I really appreciate Fred Hampton Sr. when he talked about you don't fight racism with racism. You fight it with solidarity. And that's
exactly
what our generation needs to show. We need to show that solidarity. And for me, I don't care what those Democrats or Republicans or anybody else do. If you come to me as one of the people, I'm going to respect you as one of the people. If you're coming to me with your label and trying to uphold that your party is better than this party, both parties have had the House over the last 20 years, controlled the House, and we still complaining. And so we go to that scripture, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. When the wicked are in authority, the people mourn. It wouldn't matter if you were a Democrat or Republican, because when Jimmy Carter was in there, people, he did a whole lot. And when you hear the stories about him, his integrity and this, oh, you're too soft. He wanted peace, not war. And I bet we wish we would have had that now.
I would like to speak on that, Jimmy Carter, because I, as I said, I traveled a lot of countries, and I was in Africa, and the people of Africa respect this man to this day. Of all the presidents, they said that's the only president that they will ever respect, because he went over there, he got them into the farming and all of this man. He's 90-something years old now and on his way out, but I'll tell you one thing, he is well respected by people all over the world. But I had a quick question. We're living in the United States of America, and the United States, as you know, has representatives from every country in this country, in the United States. But yet, there is all these tragic things happening through racism with not only the blacks and the browns and the red and the beige, but also the Chinese, the Japanese, and recently in Massachusetts, even the Armenians, and then the Jews. So if this is the United States of America representing people from everywhere in the world, why is there so much racism in this country? And why aren't all of these races coming together, since they're all being targeted? This is what I don't understand. The Jews, the Armenians, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, the blacks, the browns, the red and the beige. This is what makes up the United States of America, the United States of America, and this is what is going on in this country. All of these people, not only of color, but of different cultures, as you mentioned in the beginning, these cultures, these races, This is what makes up this country. So if the whites don't like it, the ones that are racist, why don't they go back to their countries? In the meantime, how would you address all of these things? How would you bring all of these people under oppression of all these different cultures and races? How would you bring all of them together in unity?
Well, one of the things that we will be able to do at the People's House, because we'll change it from the White House to the People's House, is we'll bring in those different representatives from the different organizations that's advocating for the change, and we'll show the world how we bring people together, how we can break bread with one another without this division and hate. Because I think there's one thing that we can do is talk. It's another thing we can do is teach. But then there's the biggest thing we can do is show by our example. And that's what we're bringing into this 2024 campaign, is our example. Sitting at the table, as Dr. King dreamed would be. And it seems like we're still dreaming. It's about time we woke up from the dang dream, where he said, you know, Jews and Gentiles and, you know, basically all God's children can come together. And I'm saying we are together. We're just not together as we should be on such a national, you know. And when you look at Sunday High Noon, El-Hajj Malik Shabazz Malcolm X, that's who it was formerly known as, he said that's the most divided day of the week, is Sunday at noon. And we got to stop that, you know. And you talk about, you know, these religious leaders. Some of them are really the modern-day Pharisees and Sadducees. They're keeping up this division. They're keeping up this hate. And we really want to deal with that, you know. I'm not caring about your spiritual religious belief. If you're one of the people, my commandment is to love you, you know. But let's not confuse love with discipline, because the Lord disciplines those who he loves, meaning there's still accountability when you violate, you know, your neighbor or your neighbor's property. You do harm. We're not just saying, let's let things get away. No, we're not doing that. And that's what is going on in our politics today. There's no accountability that's equally across the board. You see Young Thug or Young Slim, the rapper in Georgia, on a RICO charge. He gets no bond. Trump comes down there with a $200,000 bond there 5-10 minutes. You can't tell me that's not something to do with somebody's status. Why? What's the difference? Same RICO charge. I just say we the people have to stand up and take the power that we've given to representatives who are not representing us. And some of those that are in those positions, I truly believe 100% want to do right. One of the people is LaShawn Ford. He's a state rep out here in Illinois. He goes against the grain. His own party threw him under the bus and tried to get him indicted on all kinds of stuff. Because he from what I've seen in his track record, he's a man of principle, and he's looking for solutions. I'm saying that because I think there's other candidates that run for office, and some of them, they don't want to be blackballed. So, you know, they choose not to speak up even though their spirit is wrong. So we want to bring that hope to this campaign, saying, you know what, if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, but you believe in a constitutional republic, you believe the rights of the people are sovereign, you can stay in the position. We don't want to bring a challenger against you. We don't want to do that. What we want to do is to make sure we get this nation that is run by us, for us, because we are the people, not those that are our servants. You're going to serve us, you're going to represent us, and we're going to come to you with, you know, the situations in our communities or our areas as your constituents, and you're going to do right by us. Or you'll be up out of here in 2 years or 6 years, or we'll do a recall. We don't care. We tired of it. We fed up, and we don't want to hear another 50 years of excuses of what somebody going to do. We don't need another act. We need you to stop acting and get your butt to work. Because that's what we got. A lot of these people just acting. We ain't got time for that no more, Miss Leona.
One of the things that I find is this is demonstrating how serious our government is right now. Division, not only the division part, but the leadership. When we have a possible, and it's probably going to be an actual government shutdown as of this weekend. And to me, leaders do not punish the citizens of the United States because they can't come to a solution. And this is what we have with the current Republicans and Democrats. Unfortunately, it's going to affect a lot of people, including the military. Right now, they don't even have anyone in charge of the military. So we could be attacked by any country at any time with no protection. And this is a farce. This is a joke. Because I can't even believe that we are actually living in a country called the United States of America and having no leadership, no control, possible or actual shutdown within the next 3 or 4 days. And everybody is going to be affected by this. So what are your thoughts on this? I mean, what are your thoughts on this ridiculous feud between two? They act like they're still in elementary school. So what are your thoughts on this kind of leadership? This is sickening. Mm-hmm. This is sad.
Right. And it comes to the point, that's why we have to fire them and bring in new leadership. Ones that are actually servants of the people that are going to serve the people. That's it. Because their salaries are not being affected. They're secure in what they're doing. We're the ones that are suffering. So it's time to be like that guy, say, you're fired. Get rid of them. 2024, you got to go. And you look at everybody that's part of this shutdown that's going on right now, and you listen to what they're saying. If you're on this call right now and you know those individuals are in your state, look in here to what they're saying and doing. And if you don't like what they're saying and it doesn't align with you, you put yourself against them, or you find somebody in the community with a heart from the community that can represent the people of that community, and let's put them up in the Congress. Let's push their campaign. We the people have the power to do that. It's ridiculous. This is the second time that I'm familiar with one of these dumb government shutdowns. And who suffers? It's always we the people.
And I understand there's no, right now, this should be, when something like this happens, this should be a higher power in this world if they're going to have anything like that. They should have somebody that's above the people that are making these decisions to shut down the government. There should be somebody that has more control over these kinds of decisions every year or every 4 years or whatever it might be. But I don't know if they have, and I understand too, even with the highest of judges, like Clarence Thomas, Thomas and all that, there's no accountability. It seems like there's no one above them that can step in cases like this. So what is it exactly that is going to happen when we don't have anyone that can make decisions against these decisions, inappropriate decisions that are being made?
You got to give me a second. I want to pull something up on that.
It's so crazy because, as I said, in 4 days, it's going to be shut down and there's no one that can turn this thing around because they know, we all know, this is political. This is gameplay with each other.
Right. Let me tell you right here what I want to tell you.
And this war between Russia and Ukraine, I think that too, that needs to be left up to them. There might have been some negotiating going on if we weren't so quick to step in and provide all these. Whatever happened to NATO? The United States isn't the only one in NATO. So when the United States started sending all this stuff over to Ukraine, all of a sudden NATO seems, the other countries stopped. So what is with the United States? What are we doing?
They have, the United States has truly become a tyranny. That's what has happened. They have. And it's our duty as a people, our duty to overthrow them. It's our duty. And we cannot just keep sitting back, you know, talking about them. This is what they're doing. We the people got to rise up. We do. We have to do it. We have to do it. We have to. Because if not now, then when? If not us, then who? Who's going to do it?
We need to also challenge the media in this country to stop focusing more on the issues that are going on in this country, and not just with animals, not just with the nature, not just with all these childish things that they report, but they, this is a big country, this is a big world, and the news that they report almost on a daily basis, the same old news, is not reporting everything that's going on that the people should be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So the media has also been a problem.
Right. And you know what part of the solution is this. When I go back to the 1800s and the early 1900s, when they had the Northern Star and the Gazette, and just these different newspapers from Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey, they had way less than what we had, and they did so much more. And I'm saying, like, dude, we literally can become our own news stations, our own news stuff. What you're doing with Blog Talk Radio, it's no different than NPR and some of the other radio stations that people are having. And what we got to do is use these as a tool to teach. So when people come on, they're not just hearing some more stuff. They're hearing how to pick up their mantle or pick up their bed and walk and learning how to implement solutions. That's what we have to do. We have to be able to do this. And that's what we're bringing to this campaign. Again, we cannot wait till 2024. Hell, we could barely wait till the weekend with all the stuff that's going on. So the more of us that get knowledgeable about our rights and how to get a remedy, the more of us is going to be able to be free, and more of us will be able to represent this nation the way it should be. That's what it is. We, the people, are what makes up the nation. We're the politic body of people that make this up.
There have been many, many times where we, the people, have been called upon to try to come together in unity to make calls to the media, to do something on a national basis, on a national level, to see some positive things happen. And yet we, the people, there's so many of them out in the communities, again, that prefer to talk about the problems and not do anything to unite to solve these problems or resolve them. So I just feel as though I'd like to see more information getting out to the people around the country. And if it takes debates, let it so be it. Because these people that we've been listening to at these debates and these Republican and Democratic parties that we've been listening to, that's all it's been is talk. I listen to the news, MSNBC. I listen to the news and CNN, Fox 25. The only thing I hear about every single day and everyone else hears about is this thing with Donald Trump. This has been going on for 7 or 8 years, and all the money that's being spent talking about it, they don't seem to be able to do anything with it. So why don't they just work on it behind the scenes and let us know when they have finally done something that has actually happened, something that is positive? Why don't they do it behind the scenes so that we are not being drained listening to this every single day? Because that's what's happening. And I know a lot of people in this country are fed up with it. They don't need to have us on the show listening to their show or watching their show every time we turn the TV on to listen to them talking about the same thing they talked about 8 years ago. If they're afraid to do anything with Donald Trump, then do it behind the scenes or do whatever they have to do and just let the citizens of this country move forward, try to go on with their lives.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I don't know. So you have, when did you actually start your campaign?
June 13th.
Okay, so it's only been a few months then. And so just give the audience again some of the information on how they can get in contact with you, how they can start participating. And also, there's a lot of things that people, I'm sure, can do virtual, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ms. Leona.
No, I was just going to – I just repeated that. There's a lot of things that can be done virtually.
The biggest thing we want to do is get the message out, which we're doing it daily. I just got the last set of palm cards that are being made up that allows me to send them in to to all these prisons across the country, because we have several prisons on board with the campaign. So now I'll be able to get them some material. But for those that are out, sharing the message, helping me get on the podcast, radios, people who know newspaper, whether they're grassroots, small, independent, listen, hit them up and help me to get on, because that's how I met you, Miss Leona, through Angie. So it was great. And the other thing is I can be reached on our LinkedIn or www.awj2024.com. That's my campaign website. And if I'm on all social media as Hood Candidate, so you can find me there. that's it. You can Google Andy Williams Jr. You'll find me. I'm out here. And you'll come up and find some of the cases that I've filed against Trump and Pritzker, too, when you go out there. So,
what are your thoughts on the immigrants that DeSantis and Governor DeSantis and also Governor Abbott from Texas and Florida, they lured these people up into this country on promises of jobs, and then they sent them or had them sent to Massachusetts and New York to prove a point to the Democrats. What are your thoughts on all of this childish things that are going on actually with immigrants?
So I don't really know what's going on with DeSantis and them with their immigration and what they're doing, other than I see some comments like shoot them down or do some things like that. I do know in Illinois there's a lot of foreigners, as I like to call them, that are here, and which why we do, you know, advocate for the foreigners as being allies. I think in Illinois, the slap in the face is that there's a sister out here, Inglewood Barbie, that met with the mayor prior to him becoming the mayor, and she's got a small group of individuals that are houseless that she says they're friends, and he said, you know, we're going to do something, and then now these foreigners come over and you just forgot about them. And so the point is yes, we want to welcome the foreigners, and yes, we want to help people. For me, it's from a biblical standpoint. But I'm also saying, why are you not taking care of home first? That's just the thing. Like, it's easy to always get distracted and say, oh, we want to help the least of these. But the least of these are in our own backyards. They're in our own backyards.
I have to say one thing, though. People came over from England and other countries when the Native Indians were here, and this was considered their land, is Jamaica is considered Jamaican to the Jamaicans, and Haiti to the Haitians, and Cape Verde to the Cape Verdeans, and Trinidad to the Trinidadians, and all these things. I mean, this country was built on immigrants coming over here. The sad thing about it now is that we have people that are saying they don't belong, and that the hatred going back to biases. The hatred that these people have in this country towards immigrants have caused thousands and thousands of children to be without their parents now in the cages of the United States. Their parents were taken from them. Their parents were supposed to have been deported, but you don't hear anything of it. So I don't know if they were deported or if they were murdered. But I know these children are without families. And these children go right down to, they said, toddlers and babies, eight-year-olds, all these children. They mention how these children are being raped and how they are being violated. They are being molested by the people who are supposed to be overseeing them. I want the audience and I want everybody in this country to know that this country is Babylon, is barbaric. If they can do these kinds of things to children, just because they don't want them in this country, because what about us? Well, let me tell you, years ago, they were busing people from New Bedford, Massachusetts to Cape Cod to work. And the people complained on the Cape. They complained because these people were being bused to their place to take their jobs. But yet the reason they were being bused to the Cape to take those jobs is because those people didn't want to work. They didn't want to take those jobs. Well, that's the same way with immigrants. That's the same way with people in this country. We talk about the people in this country that are getting all these benefits given to them. Well, if you don't like giving it to them, let them do volunteer work in exchange for what they're getting. There are so many, and I say this all the time, there are so many dilapidated buildings in the cities, and I'm sure you have them in Illinois, dilapidated buildings, run-down places that they can have renovated. We have these young kids in vocational schools that once upon a time used to go out and do hands-on work. Carpenters, auto mechanics, all of these things. We have people from other countries coming over here, these immigrants, that have some skills in building. So when they talk about all these benefits that people are getting, let them do some volunteer work to clean up the streets and the cities. You know, let them go and rake. Let them go and mow lawns. Let them go and sweep up the streets. But to deny them their right, just like our ancestors at some point in time came over from other countries representing this country. So all of these immigrants, they should not be torn apart. They're running from one violent country to another country that's going to be even more violent because they don't want them. And these are some of the issues that I'd like to see somebody that's running for president talk about. And I'd like to have the people of this country know that they are wrong to hate these people because these people are trying to find a safe haven. These people are trying to get help. Just like our prisons are full, mass incarceration, because no one was there to support them, to listen to them. Many of those people incarcerated were traumatized as children. We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions, but yet they're all thrown in prison like cattle. I'd like to see some of these people in government, or even we the people in your campaign, talking about some of these issues that we need to. If we're going to come together in unity, we need to come together 1,000% and stop all of this injustice being done to these children, because these children are going to grow up, they're going to hate this country, or they're going to end up in prison. As many of those people in prisons right now were traumatized. And yes, there are bad people in prison, but the majority of people in prison were people from day one that grew up with some kind of trauma. This is pitiful, because we have so many people going to churches and going to the synagogues and talking about peace, 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 and yet they hate without a cause. And that's in Exodus 23, verses 1 to 3. Multitude coming together to hate somebody that's less fortunate than them.
I think there's the same sense of multitudes of people that are together to combat the hate, but they don't know what to do. You know, we show up. Like I say, I always say, we can come together in March, but then what do we do after the march? Then what? And so many of us are hearers of the word, but not doers, because possibly we don't know how. I you know, a lot of the things I learned because I read and then I did. I read and I did. The first campaign, I didn't know nothing about filling out FEC paperworks and quarterlies and the statement of candidacy and that. There was nobody there to teach me, but I read the instructions, and then I applied myself doing that. And that's what I feel like we, the people, we can do. If somebody teaches us, let's do it then. Let's go ahead and do it. And some of us don't know. Some of us do. We see all these organizations coming out here advocating, raising money. Well, we need to say, look, are you really doing what you say you're doing? And if not, then we need to expose that while we're doing our thing to actually do it. We have a great opportunity with the way the world is today. I think we have one of the best opportunities to rise up and get something done.
We have celebrities and we have athletes that make millions of dollars in contracts. And they build houses, $650 million houses. You know, this is power play. And it really makes me sick. I live simple. And I will give. I've given so much, I have little to nothing anymore. But this is the way it is. People with money, and that's why it says the love of money is the root of all evil. We have athletes. We have celebrities that could have normal houses, just like anybody else, beautiful homes, and donate or give or help people who are less fortunate. I watch TV when I see these kids from Sudan with flies all over their face and swollen stomachs from starvation. Well, this is what goes on in a lot of these third world countries, a lot of these countries where people completely ignore it because they're content with their own little gold mine. It's sad when we have people in this country that are so focused on themselves and their millions of dollars, and they can't get enough of it. And that's the same way we have it with a lot of these people in power, in politics. It's not about the American people. It's about their own power struggle, and it's about their own corruption. And I want the audience to hear this because they need to think about change. They need to think about somebody to take over that's not going to be like the normal or the abnormal that we've had throughout the years.
Right, right. And we should be able to do that. We can do that. We can do that. And again, I know there's things going on in third world countries, but the same piece of starvation, as unfortunate as it is happening right here domestically. The same thing, the health care, people needing stuff, dying from malnutrition. It's happening here. I mean, we can just, if you see what happens with the meals with the people that are in prison, then we say, oh, they're just prisoners. Just who cares? Like, no. You know, these are still people. And if it's anything about any form of rehabilitation, which, again, I don't at no point believe that that's what these correctional facilities are doing. They're warehousing them because these brothers and sisters and children are being sold on the stock market. They're being trafficked. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
You know, you mentioned something I just wanted to real quickly say. Someone told me one time that right down the street from the White House in Washington, D.C., you can find all these homeless people out there in the streets with no place to go. And as far as the correction of the prison, I don't know if you heard about the young man that died. He was eaten alive by bed bugs.
Yes.
That's how badly he was neglected in that prison. Eaten alive by bed bugs. Another one, Daryl Rainey from Florida, mentally ill several years ago. They put him in a shower, locked the shower from the outside, turned the water up to 180 degrees and scalded that man alive while everybody on the block could hear him screaming for his life. These are some of the things that the media doesn't talk about. This is what's so sickening. They put it in the media, one or two articles, and that's it. So the public it needs to be educated, and I'm glad that you're educating these people on a lot of these things that are happening in this country and the need for change.
Yeah.
There was a woman from California. Her husband was beaten to death not too long ago, a few years back. And she said that she strongly believes that because there was a problem with the one of the officials there, that the official had it set up for him to be beaten to death. And these things happen around the country. These injustices are happening around the country. And this is why I say there needs to be oversight in the Department of Corrections nationwide. And I hope someday that we'll be able to see some changes in that, because right now it's up to the governors of each state. This is how inconsistent we are in this country. Every state operates differently, unless it's federal. So if the president pardons anybody from prison, it would be on a federal basis. It would only be federal prisoners. If there was any changes in the way things work in every state, it would have to be done by, I guess, the governors or the president. I don't know. But somehow, how would that work?
In some cases, it's the state's attorney or the attorney general. But part of us repealing and reversing the negative effects of the 1994 crime bill is that the federal government can offer incentives to the states to bring a form of restorative justice. And there are some progressive states and district attorneys and prosecutors and the such that are implementing restorative justice. I know North Dakota has modeled their prison after Norway. Here in Illinois, one of the brothers, Cliff Nellis, they have diversion courts, which are really community courts that they allow the restorative justice principles to be put in place. And so the individual doesn't go to jail or is not arrested. There's certain things that are happening. The real solution behind that for Andy is to go back to Turtle Island. When the Aboriginals was here, when it was in North America, but named as Turtle Island prior to, you know, the Great Britain and the invasion of, you know, those ancestors, because they were conquered. You dig? Like, that's what happened. They wiped them out, and there was land here, and with the Pope Papa's Bull came out or whatever that time with the Doctrine of Discovery, that any land that you come across, you can wipe them out and take the land. So that's got a lot to do with our ancestors and how we don't have the land today because of that. That's very old. And I'm one that says, well, who did you buy the land from? Because the scriptures, you know, say, hey, heaven is God's throne and the earth is his footstool. He created everything. So it was for us to enjoy. But when you have one individual or group of people that they're taking yours through force, that's, again, that's slavery. That's another form of oppression. And when we put in the principles of restorative justice, we don't, like my brother Jay Burton, you know, he did text me, but I bring his case up in the sense that he's been locked up over 30 years, and it's, you know, the fingerprint ain't, it's not even clear, it's not even him, you know, based on the story that he shared with me. But where do you get the resource to test? Oh, it's too long. Oh, we didn't need this. Like, that judge, that DA or prosecutor, they need to be able to feel, you know, the wrath. And I don't want to say wrath in a vengeance way, but, like, there has to be some accountability. This man has spent 3 decades in prison. How can you give that back? That's a form of genocide. You're not having kids. Like, our family structure is being torn down. But when we implement the tools of restorative justice, now we have a different approach. And now these modern day plantations are back in the 70s where it was like, you know, 500 people, a couple hundred thousand, not to where it's at today in the millions, you know, a couple million. It wasn't like that until they came out with this war on drugs and, you know, militarize our communities and stuff. And now we have the ability to back to what you were saying is under the federal government and incentivize these states. Like, look, if you implement this restorative justice plan, I mean, we have it written out, a draft called the Restorative Justice Act, and it really deals with reversing the 1994 crime bill, getting rid of this habitual offender, these 3 strikes, these draconian laws, draconian legislation, because, again, they're not laws, and dealing with it like that. You know, it's so many people out here that have reentry models, you know, from people that have been incarcerated and came home and then went back like Frederick Douglass did or Sojourner the Truth and, you know, began to provide resources and hope to those that are still, you know, left behind and then providing services for when the people come out. And what if each state, each county, each city, each, you know, community offered that? What if the churches that really were the forefront of this social justice movement, as my brother out of Florida, Society First, he's the one that really put that on me, saying, you know, the church has to be at the forefront of this because that's what they're called to. You know, if they're called to have the keys, then open up the doors. I mean, go through the doors that are open. We got to quit blaming it for everybody else. And to, you know, my brothers and sisters on them plantations, you know, there's somebody out here. Our campaign is coming to bring y'all home, coming to get y'all. I guarantee you we coming to get y'all. And I'm sure every single month we're going to have parties up there at the people's house for reentry parties because there's going to be people coming home by the busload. And we're shipping them straight to Washington to have a party, get them groomed up, get them some outfits on. Some of them could work with the, you know, with our cabinet in their communities. because when you one of the things a lot of the rhetoric is around taxes and the billionaires, I believe Coke or Gates said, you know, I'd pay more. I don't know the truth to the statement one way or another, but I'm saying now we get to put, you know, put your money where your mouth is, which the Koch Foundation is a conflict with some of the stuff they do. But they do have this organization called Stand Together, and they are funding people like this brother, Anton, I think his name is. He was a former Blood. He's out of Texas. They got this OG United doing fabulous work, fabulous, fabulous work what this brother is doing. We get to, you know, tap into the private donors based on our cabinet and say, listen, you can get a tax write-off under these opportunity zones that were passed through the Trump administration. And then when you use that money from these private donors to invest into our communities, you know, whether it be the Delta of Mississippi, you know, South Carolina, the projects in California, you know, the poverty around the corner from, you know, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue that was shown in the Reagan administration. Like, these areas still exist. You know, you can do a YouTube search and see the 15 most poorest communities. Well, that's what we should be doing. We're not just rebuilding Black Wall Street. We're rebuilding the streets. We're doing.
We have about 3.5 more minutes left, and I'd like to suggest one thing to you. There's a lot of, in the universities around the country, there's a lot of law students, there's a lot of social justice students, majors, there's a lot of political science majors, and I want to say the political science, these students desperately want to work in programs like this. They want to work in, like I have my volunteers in my organization. They are students going to law school and criminal justice. But political science, I had one. He is now in Australia, and he went to the Biden in Baltimore. But anyway, I would maybe suggest that have someone from your team contact the universities and give these political science majors an opportunity to do some work with you, because they're looking to do their internships. They're looking to gain experience because this is what they're going for. So I think a lot of times people don't use them. They don't try to use these volunteer students. And I've recommended this to even some legal firms to start using them. They claim that they don't have enough help, but yet they don't want to contact the schools to allow these students to do some volunteer work with them. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention, Andy, so that maybe it would be an opportunity for them and it would be a help for you as far as moving this thing forward, quicker as well. But I want to thank you, and I want you just to say whatever you want to say to the audience before we close. We have 1.5 minutes left, so please let them know. And we will have Andy back on with us next Tuesday at 5:30 Eastern Daylight Time. I hope you will all join in, listen, call in, ask questions, provide feedback, whatever. And also tomorrow we will be interviewing Franz Dow from the Netherlands, former 27-year warden. He is involved with the United Nations. He's involved with the Global Red Cross. He's involved with the Ministry of Psychiatry and many, many other organizations. He is currently working with advocates in the Texas area now around projects, various projects concerning the incarcerated, I believe. But he will be on with us tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Please call in and join. And I'd like to have you connect with them sometime, too, when you get a chance, because that is something that he would probably be interested in. But if you can, just with the closing, can you let the audience know anything else you'd like them to know, how they can contact you to volunteer or help in any way, and with financial contributions, where they can be sent as well?
If you can go to my website, www.awj2024.com. You can reach me there. You can get me on LinkedIn, Andy Williams Jr. at LinkedIn. By, I'm pretty sure, Friday, I'll have the contact email on the website up. It might be up now, but I know it'll be up. So that's it. But I'm on all social media platforms as the Hood Candidate. You can find me, or Andy Williams Jr., you can find me. So I appreciate you guys. Such a great feeling to know that this is our generation and we're really going to make this change. We really are.
I want to thank you for coming on and talking about these things. It's always good to know there's some people out there that are still trying to be making changes, trying to be motivated to do these things. I am sick of hearing so many people talk about the problems in this country and absolutely doing nothing but talking. We're in a generation now where technology has taken over and people prefer to do emails and chats and all of these crazy things that I don't believe in. Because when you're face-to-face with someone, virtual meetings or whatever the case may be, and you're trying to do something positive, it'll work out a lot better. But audience, I hope and pray that you have gotten something from this. I hope you'll join us next Tuesday when Andy Williams Jr., presidential campaign candidate, comes back on again and ask questions, because we're not going to make change as long as we just sit back, listen, and do nothing. You know what the current and the former presidents were about and are about. If you want to continue to have this going on in the country, then be my guest. But I am fed up with it, and I want to see some changes. And as Andy Williams Jr. says, we are the people. He is running for the We Are the People Party, and I thank you so much, Andy. Once again, we look forward to having you back on with us next Tuesday at 5:30 Eastern Daylight Time.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, audience. We are now going to be closing. I thank you all for listening in, calling in, and again, please join us tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time with Frans Dahl from the Netherlands, and next Tuesday with Andy Williams Jr. at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Thank you all for listening in, and we are now ending this episode. Thank you.
Gotcha.